Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Arca Continental conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. Please note that this call is being recorded. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn it over to Melanie Carpenter of iAdvise Corporate Communications. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Today, Arca Continental will discuss its results for the first quarter of 2015. This is actually the first time in which the company is incorporating high-definition audio technology into their earnings call, and we really hope it makes for a better experience for our participants. We welcome your feedback, as always. The earnings report went out this morning, and the long version is available at arcacontal.com in the Investor Relations section. There's also an audio webcast, and there will be a replay through the website. It's now my pleasure to introduce our speakers. Joining us from Monterrey are Mr. Arturo Gutierrez, Chief Operating Officer, Mr. Emilio Marcos, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Manuel Gutierrez, Director of Corporate Planning, as well as the Investor Relations team. And with that, it's now my pleasure to turn the call over to Arturo Gutierrez to give the company's presentation. Please go ahead, Arturo.
Thanks, Melanie, and good morning, and thank you for being with us today to review our performance for the first quarter. I will begin with an overview of our consolidated results and operating highlights, and then Emilio Marcos will follow with financial details for the quarter. At the end of our presentation, we will address any questions that you may have for us. Let me start by saying that we are very pleased with our results reported today. We delivered another solid quarter, reflecting our ability to consistently execute our strategic priorities while managing through a still volatile macroeconomic environment. The first 3 months of this year turned out to be more difficult than expected. As you are probably aware, the entire beverage industry in Mexico was impacted by unseasonably cold and rainy weather. Average temperatures in many areas were 5 degrees Celsius below normal, and rainfall across the country for the month of March was at its highest level since 1941. Despite all of this, we delivered outstanding results, underscoring once again that Arca Continental is well positioned to continue growing profitably. Consolidated volume, not including jug water, grew 2.2% in the quarter to reach 260 million unit cases, while total revenue increased 14.2% to 15.3 billion pesos. Our commercial execution, revenue growth management, and price pack architecture are all enabling us to sustainably win at the point of sale. In addition, we continue improving our earnings momentum, posting solid gains both at the top and bottom line. Consolidated EBITDA for the quarter rose 11.6%, reaching close to 3 billion pesos. This was the 16th consecutive quarter of EBITDA growth since the merger of Arca Continental. Achieving such a consistent performance during a time of ongoing macroeconomic uncertainty is a proof of the strength of our capabilities. Our focus on market execution and supply chain efficiencies allow us to improve economic profit and long-term cash flow, while we continue to reinvest in the business and to anticipate changes in the marketplace. In summary, at Arca Continental, we remain relentless in our efforts to become more efficient, leaner, and nimble to changing market conditions. In this regard, we were honored this past quarter when we received the top award for operational excellence in the transformation category granted by the Global Supply Chain Council of the Coca-Cola Company in recognition for a contribution to promote a culture of innovation and quality improvement across our operations. During the first edition of these awards, the board, composed of representatives from the Coca-Cola Company and bottlers from all over the world, recognized the success of Arca Continental in implementing operational excellence practices throughout the entire organization. Moving now to our operating groups, let me start with North America, which includes our beverage business in Mexico and the snack business in both Mexico and the U.S. Volume in Mexico continued to gradually improve despite unseasonably adverse weather conditions and heavy rains across our territories. Volume in the first quarter, not including jug water, grew 1.3%, driven by solid growth in still beverages and packaged water of 7% and 4% respectively. North America's net revenues increased 3.5% in the first quarter to reach 10.4 billion pesos. Average price in our beverage business in Mexico rose 1.5% to 48.5 pesos per unit case. The sports drink category also contributed to volume growth, increasing 13% as a result of the successful launch of Powerade Zero, the calorie-free version of our leading isotonic brand. Powerade continues expanding volume and value share thanks to its product quality and our execution capabilities. EBITDA in North America rose 2.3% to 2.1 billion pesos for the quarter, representing a margin of 20%, a moderate contraction of 20 basis points due to increases in key inputs like sweeteners. We have been able to sustain overall profitability despite the challenging consumer environment and macroeconomic volatility. We are also implementing targeting market initiatives to increase immediate consumption with new single-serve affordable presentations in returnable packages. Returnable bottle mix grew 0.6% in the quarter to reach 38.1%. The new 235 ml lean can presentation across our sparkling portfolio announced last quarter to support our smaller size packaging efforts is rapidly gaining preference with consumers and generating strong incremental transactions above our expectations. Furthermore, we are making significant headway with our Santa Clara dairy products. Flavored milk is growing at double-digit rates as we have leveraged our traditional and at-home routes to expand coverage. We continue investing in cold equipment to boost this category with retailers. Exports of Topo Chico mineral water once again delivered double-digit volume growth, strengthening its leadership position in the south-central region of the U.S. as a result of package innovation and marketing campaigns in convenience stores and supermarkets. Let's now turn to our snack operations in North America, consisting of Bocados in Mexico and Wise Foods in the U.S. Bocados posted mid-single-digit sales growth and solid margin expansion as a result of disciplined execution at the point of sale and implementing a new program to increase route productivity. We captured additional volume and value share, outperforming the snack industry in Mexico, thanks to a diverse and more affordable portfolio, an attractive price-value proposition, and expansion into new markets. Last month, Bocados received from the President of Mexico, Mr. Enrique Peña Nieto, the National Technology and Innovation Award in the category of Innovation in Marketing. The award recognized Bocados' long-term commitment to product innovation and marketing, in particular the renovation of the traditional peanut candy, Mazapan Azteca, through exciting presentations and new packaging. As a result of these initiatives, the Mazapan category in the snack portfolio grew 22% last year. Wise, our snack business in the U.S., grew above the salty snack category in its region, despite being hit by multiple snowstorms and frigid temperatures for most of the first quarter across many of our territories in the Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, and Metro Upstate New York. In addition, Wise continued broadening its product portfolio in snacks with the launch of new flavors and new packaging for potato chips, plantains, and cheese puffs. Let us now move to South America, where our operations delivered solid volume, revenue, and profit growth, consistently expanding market share in both Argentina and Ecuador. Volume in the region was up 4.6%, led by 21% growth in packaged water, 10.5% in still beverages, and 2.6% in sparkling. We're boosting profitable growth in still beverages by leveraging the investments recently made in our manufacturing infrastructure. On a currency-neutral basis, total revenues in South America grew 41% in the quarter. EBITDA in the region rose 42% to 878 million pesos for the quarter, representing a margin of 18.1%. On a currency-neutral basis, EBITDA margin increased 36%. The result for our beverage business in Argentina confirmed the sequential improvement in volume recovery. Volume for the quarter rose 4.9%, driven by 122% growth in still beverages and a 37% increase in bottled water. We launched new flavors of Aquarius, our flavored water brand, to support its volume expansion. Also, Burn was relaunched as the relevant brand in the energy drink segment. Price adjustments combined with sustained actions to offset the impact of increases in certain inputs were key factors in maintaining momentum in Argentina. Moreover, we recently announced the construction of a new bottling plant in the city of Corrientes to support our growth in the northeast region of Argentina. With an investment of over $78 million, the new facility will expand capacity and incorporate the most advanced production technologies to widen our portfolio of sparkling and still beverages. We are confident in our abilities and discipline to continue delivering positive results in this market. We have a solid track record and the experience to face challenging economic environments in emerging markets. In Ecuador, our beverage business posted solid 4.4% volume growth, driven by an increase of 5% in sparkling beverages, 9% in bottled water, and 60% in the sports drink category, where Powerade is rapidly gaining market share thanks to an attractive price point, product innovation, and sponsorship of the National Ecuadorian Soccer Team. As part of the Operational Excellence Corporate Initiative, we are making steady progress with the standardization of best practices, which will enable us to reinforce our culture of quality, streamline processes, and promote teamwork. The projects already implemented in Ecuador and Argentina have significantly contributed to ramping up the productivity, safety, and sustainability of our facilities while expanding our go-to-market and customer service capabilities. Moreover, in order to address the growing demand for our products in Ecuador, we started the construction of a state-of-the-art bottling plant in the Machachi province, south of Quito, to replace our current plant in that city. We will invest around $80 million in the new facility to produce sparkling and still beverages with the most efficient and environmentally friendly manufacturing technology. In Alexa, our snacks and confectionery business in Ecuador continues consolidating its market leadership in both sweet and salty snack categories, particularly in pastries, where we recently completed installing a new production line to respond to pent-up demand. And lastly, Tonicorp, our value-added dairy products partnership with Coca-Cola, delivered positive results in the first quarter. Net sales rose 2.5%, boasting double-digit EBITDA growth and margin expansion of 120 basis points, driven by growth in the yogurt and ice cream categories and the rollout of our synergy plan. This result reflects the added investment we are making in coolers and freezers to expand market coverage for dairy and ice cream products. And with that, I will turn the call to Emilio to go over financial results.
Thank you, Arturo. As always, we appreciate your participation in this conference call to review Arca Continental's financial performance during the first quarter of 2015. Consolidated revenues grew 14.2% in the first quarter. Without the Tony effect, revenues grew up 9.5% as a result of volume growth, a better price per unit case, and a positive performance in the snack division. Comparable currency neutral net revenues increased 12.1%. Our North America and South America divisions delivered net revenues increase of 3.5% and 47.1% respectively. Lower PET prices helped to offset the negative exchange rate effect and price increase in sweeteners, which ultimately dropped cost of goods sold up 14.7% or 48 over sales. Without the Tony effect, our gross margin expanded 30 basis points to 48.5%, representing a 10.2% increase. As a result of higher market investments, promotions, and campaigns at the beginning of the year, SG&A expenses were up 16% in the quarter, 12.3% without the Tony effect. Our commitment to continue boosting market investments and maintaining strict cost and expense control still in effect in order to help us reach our 2015 goals. Operating income increased 9.2% in the first quarter for a margin of 14.5%. Consolidated EBITDA increased 11.6% to 3 billion pesos, cycling a 7.3% increase in the first quarter of last year to reach a 19.4% margin. Excluding Tony, EBITDA increased 8.4%. Comparable currency neutral, EBITDA increased 10% this quarter. Income tax provision for the quarter was 627 million pesos compared to 574 million pesos in the same period of last year. Effective tax rate for the quarter was 31%, very similar to the first quarter of 2014. Comprehensive cost of financing during the quarter also remained at the same level as last year. Net income increased 12% to 1.3 billion pesos in the quarter, representing a margin of 8.5%. Without any effect, net margin remained the same. As announced last week, a dividend of 1.75 pesos per share, totaling 2.8 billion pesos, will be paid at the end of April. Our CapEx investment will be 5.2 billion pesos towards fortifying our operations, increased execution at the point of sales, and production capabilities in South America, both funded by our healthy cash flow generation. As of March 31, 2015, we had a cash position of 8.7 billion pesos and a debt of 16 billion pesos, meaning a 0.5 times net debt to EBITDA coverage ratio. Given that we closed last year with good financial performance, our goal is to maintain these profitability levels in 2015. In order to achieve that, we will leverage our capabilities at the point of sale, accelerate our revenue growth management initiatives, and solidify our product portfolio. In summary, we know that we have many challenges to face, but we have the motivation and the expertise to continue meeting our internal objectives and generating value for all our stakeholders. The positive start of the year provides a solid foundation to achieve the goals we planned for 2015. We expect a better economic environment in the coming months, which will help to increase the disposable income for our consumer base, improving sales volume and profitability, maintaining our leadership in the marketplace. And with that, I'll turn it back to Arturo.
Thank you, Emilio. In the face of 2015's volatile economic and consumption environment, we intensified our efforts to enhance the efficiency of our operations, speed up innovation in our product offerings, and perfect our market execution. As a result, we continue to strengthen our position as one of the world's most profitable non-alcoholic beverage companies, leading the Mexican market and asserting a solid international presence. We will focus our efforts on what we do best, responding quickly and effectively to market conditions in order to continue creating value for our customers, associates, communities, and shareholders, while always exceeding the expectations of our consumers. Our proven execution capabilities and the strong brand equity and variety of our product portfolio leave us well positioned to capitalize on the gradual economic and market recovery. We will continue seeking opportunities for regional expansion and product diversification in order to drive long-term profitable growth in beverages and snacks across the continent. The strength of our balance sheet, the deep expertise acquired throughout the years, as well as the continued support and teamwork of our partner, the Coca-Cola Company, provide a solid basis to do it. Arca Continental is a stronger company today in all its key aspects, operational, financial, and organizational. We are well prepared to continue growing organically and capture opportunities in the territories we serve, while playing an important role in the consolidation of the beverage and salty snack industries as we have done to date. We thank you for your continued support and confidence. Operator, please open the call for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key, followed by the 1 key on your touch-tone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order they are received, and if you wish to remove yourself from the questioning queue at any time, you may do so by dialing star 2. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. Our first question will come from Antonio Gonzalez with Credit Suisse.
Hi, good morning, Arturo, Emilio, and team. Just got a couple of questions. The first one is on your CapEx program. Could you help us quantify how much is installed capacity increasing in each one of the markets that you described earlier in the call, Argentina, Ecuador? I'm under the impression that you're also making big investments in snacks in North America, in Fort Worth. Can you just help us clarify in each of these segments how much is installed capacity increasing? And after 2015, do you see your CapEx to sales ratio coming closer maybe to 7% as opposed to maybe levels of 8% that we're seeing this year? That's question number one. And then very briefly, question number two, could you give us a bigger picture comment on market share dynamics, especially after the tax increase last year? I mean, I'm asking this question in the context of obviously every time there's been a major crisis in Latin America, in Mexico, or in Argentina, even before you were in Argentina, the Coca-Cola system has been able to capture a lot of share from other players. I just wanted to hear your assessment on last year's performance in light of the excise tax in Mexico. How do you compare that versus other episodes where the Coca-Cola system has captured a lot of share? Do you think you were as successful as in other occasions? Maybe the base was too high this time around, so it was not so easy to capture some share. Any comments that you can share in that direction would be really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Antonio, for your question. This is Emilio. Well, as you know, our historical average CapEx investment, it's around 7% of sales. But last year, we invested a little less, but around 6% of sales because the expected volume decrease from the excise tax in Mexico. But since volumes are picking up, and because we have, as we already mentioned, 3 new facilities coming up, this year our CapEx is a little bit higher, around 5.2 billion pesos, which is about 8% of sales. And the distribution will be around 50% Mexico, 15% Argentina, and 20% Ecuador, and the rest for complementary businesses. And talking about the new facilities, the CapEx that is already included in this 5.2 billion pesos, it's around 15%, which are going to be on the country that depending on the new facility, part in Argentina and the 2 new plants in Ecuador.
Okay, Antonio, if you want me to address the second question, if you're all right with Emilio's answer, let me go to the market share question. When we knew about the tax at the end of 2013, we worked on a new price pack architecture, and that takes into account what we wanted to accomplish in terms of profitability, of course, and maintaining a competitive position in the market under the current pricing scenarios. The idea of that price pack architecture was maintain a leading position. We had a very high market share, as you remember. At the end of 2013, it was our highest share probably in the recent history. And we wanted to maintain also a significant share of value. With that, we actually reduced the price gap with our competition after almost all players transferred the excise tax through pricing. We also accomplished a second thing, which is very important, which is we reduced the price premium on single serve versus multi-serve. So that curve kind of flattened a bit. So that also allowed us to sustain a very profitable mix in favor of the single serve presentation. So the result at the end was that we were able to maintain a stable share. We actually have a good trend in the recent quarters. And most of all, a very good balance between our volume share our value share and the profitability and growth overall of our business. We also look at share on terms of NARTD of all of the categories, because that is where we have more opportunity in most cases. So if you take a look, for example, at in sports drinks, Powerade now is a definite leader. In the traditional market, we grew 8 points of share last year, which is very relevant. We also grew significant share in other NARTD or still categories like tea and juices, the most value-added categories. And so we're comfortable where we are. I think it was a good result at the end of the year. We expect to maintain that leadership as we go along this year. We do some tactical pricing. And it's very important also that we have this flexibility of packages, as you know. We have returnable packages that allow us to compete with the more affordable packages and where we have the consumers that are more price sensitive. So we've been able to balance that. And you see as we go along this year, we have a good mix of returnable versus one-way packages. And most importantly, single serve continues to grow. This year, in the first quarter, we even grew the mix of single serve, which is very important for the profitability of the business. So overall, what is happening is there is some shift in share between other players in the market, and some of the dynamics are occurring there. But we have been fairly stable in our market share of SSDs and growing in the still categories.
Excellent. Very helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lauren Torres with UBS.
And my question is focusing on Mexico, particularly your volume and price performance. I think you did a good job, telling us how significant the weather impacted you in the quarter. But I think bigger picture, a lot of us are questioning this recovery we've heard a lot about in Mexico. Last quarter, you talked about hints of the recovery. I assume we're still seeing that. So I'd be curious to just get your perspective, isolating weather if you can, the consumer behavior, if you've seen strength and kind of where you've seen that. And then I guess with that said, pricing off of some aggressive pricing last year on the tax increase, the pricing that we saw in this quarter, is that somewhat reflective of how are you thinking about full year pricing, or are there opportunities for additional pricing this year? Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren. Well, with respect to the economic environment in Mexico, there are certainly a few signs, I would say, that would indicate a more favorable consumer environment in Mexico. We have to say, and you've mentioned it, that in the first quarter we grew our volume, but we have this very unusual weather conditions throughout the quarter. For example, just to tell you, in Monterrey, we had 37 days of rain in the quarter. And many of our territories had a very rainy winter as well. So that is really unusual, and we don't like to use that excuse. But in this case, this is really atypical of what usually happens in the winter months. But we grew volume. But most of all, when we see volume by channel, we see a growing traditional channel, which is obviously a good sign. Actually, traditional increases its mix in our overall total sales in the quarter, which is also a good thing. The on-premise consumption also grew, which did not happen much last year, the same as the at-work and the entertainment or leisure consumption occasions. Those actually were the channels. Those two were actually the channels that grew the most for us in the first quarter. So you can see that those might be signs that things are improving. At the same time, as I mentioned, we saw an increase in our mix of single-serve, which is also a good sign of recovery. So in summary, I would say that we anticipate a good 2015. We have the expectation of improving our volume and our volume growth quarter by quarter as we have since last year. So we expect that trend to continue. In terms of pricing, as you know, we increased prices in late 2014. That price increase, the nominal price increase was actually diluted due to a change in mix in the first quarter. And this is part of our strategy, because we had a higher mix of returnable packages. We know that was important at the beginning of the year. And on the other hand, that helps us in terms of not only of affordability for consumers, as I mentioned, but also to protect margins. Returnable packages are high margin, although the, you know, probably the absolute contribution is as much, not as much, but has a good margin. So we did that. The price increase was diluted. It was less than we would like to. So we are also to implement new price increases in the second quarter, selected, obviously, price increases. And those will also be in line with our price pack architecture and strategy. And that should get us at least to the level of inflation for the year. The other effect that we have is that in the first quarter, we had some special promotions and discounts. We have the Tapi Peso promotion in most of the territories. That was part of our plan for the first quarter. And that certainly will has a negative effect on price. But as conditions go on, we feel that we will have the reverse effect, you know, as discounts normalize, obviously, for the rest of the year. So we expect to have a better growth environment as we go along, and also a better pricing situation based not only of our based on our normalization of discounts, but also on selective price increases in the rest of the year.
Great. That's all great to hear. If I could ask just one other question, I think in your closing remarks, you talked about participating in the consolidation. And this morning, the Coca-Cola company spoke a lot about the refranchising and further steps that they're doing there. I'm sure you can't directly or maybe wouldn't directly comment on the U.S. With respect to the bottling network, but just curious, whether it be in snacks or the potential to get in on beverages, you know, how are you thinking about the United States as far as growing there? And if that's not a big topic of conversation, you know, where's the incremental spend going with respect to expansion?
Yeah, well, we will be consistent with our strategy. We've mentioned it before. We continue to search for opportunities both within the Coca-Cola system, basically, I would say, in the Americas, and also in adjacent businesses where I think we've proven that we also can create value leveraging capabilities that we have. So we believe, on the one hand, that there are interesting possibilities in Latin America, I'm talking about beverages and the Coca-Cola franchise system, and that consolidation can still bring more synergies to our company and to the system. I think we believe there are opportunities there which we are willing to pursue on the one hand. We have, you know, our practices and service models and RGM and pricing and execution and the point of sale, our segmentations capabilities. They can be replicated and they can create value. Actually, that's what we're doing in Argentina and Ecuador still as we go on. But we're also interested in growing our presence in the U.S., especially in the bordering states, the ones that are adjacent to our territories, which are the ones where we believe we can create more value, which we know many of the customers from those areas. We have geographic synergies. We've been serving the U.S. market for 25 years, and there's also an opportunity to leverage those commercial practices. We, on the one hand, have a good team to be incorporated in a project of that nature, and obviously a great relationship with the Coca-Cola company. But on the snack business, we have also been growing our footprint as in beverages, improving execution and also enhancing our capabilities, especially for innovation and product development. So we still think that we can find more opportunities in both of our, you know, our main strategies for growth, which are beverages and snacks. We are confident, and we will look for acquisition projects in both lines of business as we go on.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Fernando Ferreira with Merrill Lynch.
Thank you. Thanks for the question. I have two questions. First one, just on the same discussion on volumes in Mexico, with this relatively weak start for the year, do you still think that volume growth around 2 to 3% for the year is still feasible? That's the number one question. And the number two, just to confirm, can you remind us how much of your sales or EBITDA today comes from the non-beverage business, including Wise, Bocados, Tony Corp, and Alexa, and also how much of your CapEx is going to those businesses? Thank you.
Well, thank you, Fernando. Thank you for the question. I will address the first part and let Emilio answer the second part. With respect to volume in Mexico, well, the quick answer would be yes. We still expect a volume growth of around more than 2%, 2.5%, I would say, in Mexico. We see a good trend. As I mentioned, we continue to see a growth in our volume quarter by quarter, and we expect that trend to improve. Aside from those factors that I mentioned and good signs of recovery, we also see good overall signs of recovery in the manufacturing industry in our states, also remittances from the U.S., other signs that make us optimistic for the future, and obviously weather conditions should improve by the next few months. So we maintain a flexible strategy in terms of presentations for affordability, but also we expect that we are going to have more growth in the one-way presentations that have been flat in the last few months. So our idea and our plan was to recover actually the volume that we lost in 2014 in this year. So we would be back at the same level that we were by the end of the year before the tax, which was 2013. So we still maintain that same target. And we see opportunities in still beverages as well, which could drive growth to get at least to that target. And I will turn it to Emilio for the second part about EBITDA.
Hello, Fernando. Thank you for your question. Regarding the percentage on the snack division, sales are around 8%, 8 to 9%. And EBITDA around 4 to 5%. And as I mentioned regarding the CAPEX for complementary business, it's around 15% of our total CAPEX of 2015.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alex Robarts with Citi.
Hi. Thanks. Good morning, everybody. Can I just first ask a little bit about the adjacent businesses? And I maybe the preface is just the prize that you won on in the transformation category. Was that transformation as it relates to the adjacent businesses or transformation kind of ARCA and Clontal coming together and the production footprint? So if you could, that's kind of the first just clarification on that.
Could you clarify your question, Alex? Hi, it's good to talk to you. Could you clarify your question, please?
Yeah, the prize that you got recognized for at Coca-Cola, right, in this first quarter was in the transformation category, right? It's the best, as I understood it. Is that correct?
The award.
You mean the award
yes.
We received from the Coca-Cola company. Yes, this is an award for our operational excellence leadership. As you know, this has been an important strategy for our company for a few years now, and we have been leaders in expanding this operational excellence capabilities within our organization. As you know, we have the first plant in the system to be recognized as a reference center for operational excellence. So what we do now is we expand that further and beyond just the natural areas where operational excellence would typically be incorporated, which is basically the plants and the warehouses. So now this is a more comprehensive effort in our company to look for innovation throughout teamwork throughout the organization. So this was recognized, but this is the Global Supply Chain Council of the Coca-Cola Company that grants these awards. I don't know if that answers the question.
Yeah, no, I got it. Okay, that's
sorry,
helpful.
Sorry about the confusion. Huh?
No worries. So I thought it had something to do with your adjacent businesses and such. I mean, it's pretty well known that I guess in the Coke system globally, you guys have made the largest strides toward building this adjacent business in snacks and dairy. And as you think about this year, and we look at the three geographical regions where you are, U.S., Ecuador, and Mexico, snacks or dairy or both. How do you look at this year's progress in narrowing the margin gap, right, of these businesses up toward the beverage margin? So perhaps asked in a different way, when we look at Wise, when we look at Bucao's, when we look at the Ecuadorian snack and dairy business as kind of an adjacent business, which of those three, or how could you kind of qualify those three adjacent businesses in the sense that giving yourself a progress report in terms of the margin and the scale up and the kind of the progress toward, I guess you'll never close the margin gap to beverages, but as you narrow that gap, which ones are you kind of getting the most progress and which ones have perhaps a little bit more work to be done? So that's the first question.
Yeah, well, with respect to margin, we look at the business, it's obviously a different perspective. On the one hand, what we call adjacent internally would be the snack businesses, basically. Dairy for us is part of the NARTD business, and this is part of, obviously, our relationship with Coca-Cola. So let me address snacks first, where we have, you know, obviously different margins. We've been improving those, and we're narrowing, as you say, margins with respect to beverages. But the beverage margin is not necessarily the target because you have, on the one hand, different levels of investment, of capex in the snack business, which you have to look at the return of invested capital in the businesses, which that is the benchmark we would have with respect to beverage business, and that is how we would measure against what we are investing in beverages. And as you know, the snack business is not as capital intensive as you visited our operations as compared to beverages. On the one hand, we have separate, different models as well. So, for example, in Wise in the U.S., we don't have our DSD operations for all of our sales, as compared to Bocados in Mexico, where we have DSD 100%, and in Inalexa in Ecuador, we have a mix. We have distributors, mostly in Quito, and then we have mostly DSD in Guayaquil and the South. So that obviously is a different model that would have different margins, lower margins if you distribute to third parties, but you don't have that part of the business, and you actually don't incur investments that are related to that distribution to the accounts, to the customers. So although we are incorporating some of those, and we believe that DSD makes sense in some cases, it's not necessarily the case everywhere. So that is to say that margins are a little bit confusing. We have to take a look at the end of the return on the investment that we have on the businesses, and we're comfortable the way we are, and we're making progress. If you ask me where are we making progress, I would say in all three of the snack companies, we're doing better. We are having a very good year in Bocados, very good end of 2014, a very good year this year in Bocados in terms of profitability, basically because of more productivity of routes and of a restructuring of our operations at the distribution center level. In Wise, we are implementing some things also to make more the business more profitable. We're replacing some of the volume that is private label with our own branded volume, for example. That's one of the things that will increase the margins, but obviously would affect growth in the short term. But all three businesses are growing in an important way. And most of all, the platform that goes across the three snack businesses is innovation. Now, that is based on a single platform for all of our snack operations now that we have, you know, the scale and, the critical mass to invest in R&D for snacks. If you look at dairy, well, Bocado certainly reduces the margin for South American operations somewhat. But Tony's margin is increasing in its own, and we have the opportunities for Tony are the synergies, the hard synergies for savings, which we are implementing the plan as you'll know, and also all the revenue synergies that we have by integrating more closely the businesses with our beverage operations in Ecuador. So we still have our plan of $15 million in synergies to be accomplished in 2 years, which if you look at it in terms of a percentage of our EBITDA, original EBITDA, it's significant. It's a very, very profitable project for us in Tony. And we have the new plant in Tony as well that will come into operation next year, which will also bring more efficiencies, obviously, to our supply chain.
Yeah, no, that's very comprehensive and helpful. Thanks for that. The second and last question relates to Ecuador. You know, it's the economy that perhaps among your four operating places of business, the four countries where you operate, it seems to be the most impacted by the oil price weakness, and it also seems that there's been an austerity program that the government has put through there. And I mean, it's about 13% of your EBITDA in Ecuador. Could you talk a little bit about the consumer environment as you see it unfold this year? Have the measures that have been implemented, are they necessarily pinching the consumer, or is it more macro tax related? If you could comment a little bit on the operating consumer environment in Ecuador for this year.
Yeah, sure, Alex. Well, as you say, it's a challenging situation in general in Ecuador, and it's obviously related to a reduction in oil prices, which are important for the country and for the government. Inflation spiked a little high at the beginning of the year. But then there are restrictions on import tariffs that we have been able to deal with that, by the way, and also will have a negative effect on inflation. If you see in terms of our business in Ecuador continues to grow. We grew significantly the first quarter, and we continue to grow across most of the categories, including sparkling. Sparkling grew more than 5% in the first quarter, And we expect that to continue. We have identified many opportunities in Ecuador beyond just growing, I would say, in the same customers and same store sales, if you would say, because we have a new segmentation strategy where we are serving in a different way some of the customers that actually were not really covered by our distribution in a proper way. Customers that we used to consider very small or micro customers, and it's actually because we were not serving them properly. So we have been capturing those opportunities, and there are still many there that will give us additional growth as we go along. Same thing with other categories. Purified water grows close to 10% in Ecuador. Powerade is a big opportunity, very small mix. And juices also has significant growth, and we continue to invest in juices. We have new packaging coming on. So I think even though the economy might be slow, there are many underdeveloped categories, and our own business has many opportunities as we compare it to a more mature business that you would see in other places. I would say that the only big challenge right now in terms of growth has been tea, the only relevant category that is declining, and it is based more on the new labeling requirements that we have in Ecuador. So we're reformulating tea. And that will give us also an additional source of growth that has also been limiting our volumes in the last few months. So we have we're very optimistic about our business in Ecuador in beverages as well, not only of what I mentioned with respect to Tony and in Alexa.
And I would add that the government is not considering any adjustment on the consumer side. They're very conscious on that part, and they are not considering taxes or anything in that part. Any adjustment might be in investment from the government side.
Right. And also, I would say that we are our pricing strategy is very specific on the price points. That works very well, and we are focusing on the 50-cent, 75-cent price points, and we've been able to articulate a strategy that is profitable for us and that we can land in the right price point. So that's also very important for the year.
And also to mention that in all the businesses that we have in Ecuador, we've been able to improve margins in all the three businesses.
Okay, got it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Alex. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Luis Miranda with Santander.
Yes. Hi, guys. Good morning. Arturo, just to follow up on the pricing strategy in Mexico. As you were mentioning, the price increase implemented at the end of last year was diluted by the sales mix. And you mentioned the selective price increases for going ahead. I just want to know if looking ahead for the year, the 3% that we were talking at the end of our last year, early this year, remains the objective. And also, just to clarify, the selective price increases have already started to be implemented, or they will be for the end of the second quarter. Thank you.
Hi, Luis. It's good to talk to you. Well, yes, following up, we did have that dilution, as you say, which changed a little bit our scenario, but also we found this opportunities to increase prices. That would be in the short term, right here in the second quarter, is we're going to be implementing new pricing. This is selective, obviously, certain packages and in certain regions, but they add up to what we had the end of last year and the carryover from the price adjustments at the end of last year. On the other hand, we also have a different strategy for discounts and promotions for the rest of the year. So if you consider all that into account, and even not considering improvements in mix, so being conservative in that way, we would expect increasing prices at least at 3%. I would say more than 3% for the year. So that's why I was saying that this should be at least in the level of inflation for 2015. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, that's very clear. And a follow-up just in terms of the route to mother market, with the rollout that you had in Guadalajara and San Luis, what's the percentage of coverage that you have right now in your territories? And have you seen changes in terms of the profitability between the with the new commercial scheme?
Yes. Well, now with route to market in Mexico, we've been rolling out, as you know, for years. And at the same time that we roll out, we also continue doing adjustments and continue improving the original models, I would say. With that, we'll be getting close to 80% of the territory. And route to market at the end is not only an efficiency project. It's always a reallocation of resources. So what you're doing actually is you're sometimes reducing your intensity of service where you don't require it and reallocating those resources to serve better, larger customers or customers that that demand a different kind of service. So that is what we do overall. And we finish with the traditional market in most of our territories and probably just a small portion of the Pacific is still not covered by the original route to market, but we've made some quick wins anyway. So it's hard to set up a specific percentage because we've been making some implementations and adjustments to our operations. The next step is the route to market for the modern trade, which we piloted last year, and this is a, let's say, a 2.0 version of what we had initially, and now for the modern trade customers. This is supermarkets, convenience stores, drugstores, price clubs, and the bodegas. And it was very very successful. We're rolling it out in Mazatlán, in Guadalajara, and other places this year. So what you measure there is you measure the cost to serve, which in this case you want to at least maintain the same cost to serve with better service. And you measure, obviously, customer satisfaction and many other of the metrics that are related to modern trade in this case. In the traditional trade, the normal metric that you would use is the cost to serve and the execution index and the point of sale. So we have a department here internally that not only does the implementation and the rolling out, but also the continuous management of things that have already been rolled out to make sure that they're not distorted and to make sure that the metrics are followed and the opportunities identified and addressed. And that same department is now widening its scope to go further into South America, where we're exchanging good practices in terms of service models and route to market, currently in Ecuador and also in some territories of Argentina. And if you see, even those capabilities are useful in the snacks business as well many times. So we're trying to incorporate an overall platform for service models that we can leverage across the system.
Perfect. Thank you, Drew. That was very helpful.
Thank you, Luis. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jose Jordan with Deutsche Bank.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Just had a quick question on pricing in Argentina in local currency. I think over the past few quarters, you had been able to at least recover local inflation, not the reported, but the real inflation, and sometimes you had exceeded it. I was just wondering if that was still the case or whether your ability to pass through a real price increase in Argentina has diminished any. And then my second question is just do you still feel, as you did in the last call, that you'll be able to achieve flat EBITDA margins on a consolidated basis for the year? I ask because the peso has been more persistently weak, and I think most economists have been kind of relaxing their expectation for how much the peso can recover from here. So just love your updated view on that as well.
Sure, Jose. It's good to talk to you. I'll address the first part, which is the pricing in Argentina. And well, pricing in Argentina is always a really big challenge of our operations. We have assembled a very good team in Argentina for RGM. They focus on continuously maintaining the best price pack architecture and also increasing prices at the level of real inflation. And depends on if we agree on what that is, but we really consider that to be about 30%, which is where we are targeting right now. So we have been successful in doing that, and this year I think it will be we will be as well. It will also be our goal for 2015. For that, returnable packages are an important tool because we preserve affordability for consumers and at the same time achieving our price target. And if you see a returnable mix in Argentina has grown recently, and it's actually an example of how we can leverage the flexible portfolio to assure that our growth is profitable and that we maintain our margins. If you see our margins in Argentina are very healthy, and we continue to increase prices, as I say, it's a challenge, but this is one of our very strategic priorities to maintain a good RGM strategy in Argentina to maintain prices in line with real inflation and in line at least with our internal inflation, which is an indicator of real inflation. Our salaries increase, our inputs increase in our own operations and maintain the margins. So if you're satisfied with that part, I will turn it out to Emilio for your second question.
That's right. Very clear.
Hello, Jose. Nice talking to you. Thank you for your question. As you know, well, as you remember, last year we had a 22% EBITDA margin, which was the highest in the last 5 years. So we had a very good margin last year, a very good improvement. We improved margin 70 basis points. Our goal still to maintain the same margin as last year. Of course, we have a lot of things to do through pricing, through portfolio strategies, RGM, always implementing efficiencies, and as we have mentioned, we have been able to improve margins in the other countries, in Ecuador, Argentina, Wise, even in Bocados. So we have to compensate, and we have plans to compensate the impact that we still have a lot of volatility in the exchange rate here in Mexico. But in a consolidated basis, we still have the goal to maintain the same margins as last year.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jose. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Luca Cipicia with Goldman Sachs.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I really wanted to have a bit of a follow-up, or maybe if you can expand on Santa Clara and how that is progressing and how you're thinking of the rollout maybe or any additional initiative throughout the year. That's something that would be interesting to understand how more aggressive you're becoming on the dairy rollout in Mexico from a channel SKUs product standpoint. That would be interesting to hear from you, maybe an update on that as well, in addition to everything else we've discussed so far. Many thanks.
Sure, Luca. It's good to talk to you. Well, Santa Clara is a really important category for us. What I talk to the team, what I say to the team here internally when we talk is that we shouldn't see that in terms of its current size, but really of the potential it has within our operation. It's different to other launches we've made because it's obviously a category or categories that already exist and are very relevant in the customers that we already visit up to now. Additionally, we have a product that wins with consumers. We've made all kinds of tests with consumers, and this is a great product. So it's every time we have consumers tasting it or we have the opportunity to have it in the stores, it always gets a part of the significant part of the share. So in the first quarter of this year, it continued its positive trend. As we mentioned, it's growing. The percentage probably won't say much because the basis is small, but it's still growing 15%. It has an important performance in the at-home channel, which for us is really important because it means that it's been preferred in terms of taste by families. Now, the at-home for us is already 25% of our volume, which is also a very good sign. And if you see other cases where we've even challenged leaders, I love to talk about the case of Powerade, which is a category that existed, had a clear leader, and we didn't have a single brand in that category. And now we're leaders. As I mentioned, we have 60% of share in the traditional channel in sports drinks. So actually, it is possible. We are improving also our mix to a more profitable mix. We're growing in the more value-added dairy categories of Santa Clara. We're increasing our coverage in the traditional channel and the modern channel as well. We are increasing our cooler coverage for the brand, which is important to have a space in the store to display this brand, although we do have it many times in the other beverage coolers, but we're installing this year 6,000 coolers, especially for Santa Clara, as well as other materials for the display of Santa Clara at the point of sale.
Go ahead. Sorry, apologies to interrupt, but maybe if you can expand a little bit on this, on the coolers, just to understand. So, where does Santa Clara stand today compared to the other category in terms of coverage, and how are you rolling that out in the traditional channel in the coolers? Meaning, are we Santa Clara coolers? Are you also trying to leverage somehow more aggressively the presence, the coolers that you already have for the other products?
We use the coolers that we have for Santa Clara, especially for the smaller size presentations of the flavored milk, which are very appealing for younger consumers, for children. And we do that with a special material that sticks to the door of the cooler, and then you can display the Santa Clara products there. But if you want to have the wide portfolio, you need to have your special spaces. We have with the still categories. There is also a lot of milk that is sold outside the cooler, just at ambient temperature, which is also important for us to be present at the point of sale and to have our customer, where we have the good relationship, to taste our product and to promote it in the store. So we've been growing our coverage, as I say, in the traditional, in both flavored and just white milk, significantly, 8 points in this first few months of the year. So we're excited about how that category can give us growth just by having more coverage because, as I said, the product is very good. So we can have our own coolers, we can have space on the shelf, we can have space in the beverage cooler as well, and we're going to have a stronger presence in the modern channel and complementing that with our delivery at home. As you know, we have for the direct to home business, we currently have more than 350 routes in our territory, and that's going to be growing to more than 500 routes this year. So that's another platform for the growth of Santa Clara. So I think this is a category with huge potential for us.
And when for your clients, for your customers, for the retailers, when you know they see or they want to allocate more space for Santa Clara now compared to an alternative, you know, what is it, the proposition that makes it appealing for them as a new dairy offering that you know Arca Continental is offering? Is it, you know, is it one-stop shop? Is it the service broadly across categories that you offer? You know, what is it that really is appealing for in the traditional trade for the retailer to embark to endorse, if you like, Santa Clara instead of maybe an alternative product?
Well, you said it. For the customer, it's that you provide the service, and we're all about, you know, that customer intimacy in the traditional channel, and that is what we're leveraging to bring, you know, the whole portfolio, and we are now, a complete beverage company. Same thing for the at-home channel. For the consumer, the reason to believe in Santa Clara, it's a very good product. It's a premium product in terms of quality, and it's preferred by consumers. So we have, all the elements to make it a winning brand in our markets.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mauricio Serna with JP Morgan.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for the question and congratulations on the results. I just wanted to ask a little bit more about the performance in Mexico, specifically about market share in the convenience store channel. Have you seen any competitive pressure with the entrance of one of your main competitors into one of the leading convenience stores in this quarter? And also, if you could also comment a little bit more on performance in South America. I mean, with the really good volumes you posted this quarter, do you expect that trend to keep up throughout 2015?
Yeah, sure. Hi, Mauricio. It's good to talk to you. Yes, in terms of share in Mexico, as I said, we've had a fairly stable share. We've been recently growing market share more in the traditional channel, and that is offsetting a slightly decline in the modern trade, both in supermarkets and convenience stores grouped together. But it's not significant. We're able to maintain a good market share, and the different allocation of space in some of the convenience stores is something that's convenient for our customer and for us as well in terms of the commercial conditions that we have with each customer. What we do to still promote our sales in all of the channels, we're having a special plans for modern trade and for the convenience stores. And the convenience stores is not only the space you have in the cool space of the store, but also additional placing in the food area, which is becoming more important, more and more important for convenience, you know, near to the cash register. And those are the areas where we're focusing in, the same as tactical pricing. Where we're more affected in general when we talk about share spaces in the flavors segment. Our cola brands have very good brand equity, and they perform really well. In terms of flavors, is where we have special strategies. It's a category that presents a bigger challenge, also because you see more aggressive pricing from competition. And there, what we look is to balance profitability and volume. We're focusing particularly in some of the areas in our territory that present a bigger challenge, basically Jalisco, some territories in the center of our geography, where we have it's where we have the biggest opportunity in flavors. We are using Sprite as a main brand in some of the areas, and also consolidating efforts in major brands of the apple flavor with Mundet. So tactical pricing, some strategic packaging, and focusing on execution. What we found is the coverage of key packages, that certain combination of packs is what works best to defend our share and to maintain that balance that I mentioned between having a good share of volume, the share of value, volume growth, and obviously the profitability of our business. And going to South America, as I mentioned, although there are some challenging environments, there's challenging environment in both countries in South America, we had a very good first quarter in volume, both in Ecuador and Argentina. And also, I would say, with a very good trend since March, was actually the best month in volume growth in both countries. We expect that to continue, And the reason is not only that it's been a good month, March, but also that it's supported by consistent strategies in both of our markets. And we continue to implement those, and we expect the volumes to perform well as we go on this year.
Thank you very much. That was very helpful.
Thank you, Mauricio.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Laura Pelaez with GBM.
Hello, good morning, everyone, and congratulations for the results. You already talked about your good performance in Powerade, and congratulations for that. But I was wondering if you can give us the share that you have right now in Mexico, and also if you can give us the share that you have in the steel beverages, specifically in bottled water and flavored water. Thank you.
Hi, Laura. It's good to talk to you. Yes, as I was mentioning, steel beverages have been a good source for growth for us, not only in Mexico, but also in South America. And I think we've proven that even though some of the brands are recent, others have been obviously acquired, but we've been able to make them leading brands. What I can say is that, you know, Powerade is a great example. We've been growing share, and we are now the leaders with more than 50% share of market in our territories. In the traditional channel, we have a higher market share even than that. But even on the average, weighted average share of all channels, we have more than half of that. And so we maintain actually leadership, I would say, in all of the brand categories of stills. In tea and in water in the traditional channel, purified water, for example, is also more than half of the market, of the market, the volume of the market. And same thing with juices now. We've attained leadership in our markets where Del Valle was not as strong a brand as in the center of the country, and we've been able to accomplish that. We're getting close to that 50% mark in Del Valle juices and nectars in the traditional channel as well. So what I can tell you in general is that now we're leader. We're probably number two in one of those categories, which is flavored water. But the rest, we are leading the market, and we are also improving our share.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Fernando Olvera with BBVA.
Hi. Hello. Good morning. Thanks for taking my question, Lilian and Arturo. My question is related to the cost-saving program. I don't know if you can give us an update, and if you can share a figure with us, it would be very helpful.
Yes. Hi, Fernando. It's good to talk to you. Well, what we have implemented here in the company is a continuous savings program in not only in Mexico, but in all of our countries. We have some specific projects, like in the case of Coney, where we have the acquisition and the synergies. But then even if we don't have a particular project, we continue to identify opportunities for savings in all of our areas. We have, bi-monthly, quarterly meetings to follow up on savings. We are not reporting that now here to you, but we can assure you that we continue to find efficiencies in best practices, in the supply chain, in lightweighting of bottles, in some of the negotiations with suppliers, centralization of some of those negotiations. So we continue to do that. We don't have a report for the quarter again. We expect that to provide or mitigate some of the effect of the exchange rate impact in our results this year. And that helps, as Emilio was explaining, to meet our goals for 2015, our financial goals for 2015.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good to talk to you, Fernando.
Thank you. We have no further questions at this time. I would like to turn the conference over to Arturo Gutierrez for closing remarks.
Well, thank you. Thank you all for your continued interest in Arca Continental. Please do not hesitate to contact our IR team for any further questions. Have a great day.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect. Speakers, please remain on.